It's my first time.
Welcome to Babylon 5 for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I'm watching Babylon 5 for the first time.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I'm also watching Babylon 5 for the first time. Jeff and I are two veteran Star Trek podcasters watching Babylon 5 for the very first time, searching for Star Trek-like messages in the series, trying to decide, should we have watched this, you know, 30 years ago when it was first coming out?
Well, unlike you, I was busy watching Star Trek when this came out the first time, but you were a latecomer to Star Trek.
I didn't get into Star Trek till after it was pretty much off TV for a while, or really close to it. I saw Enterprise, but this particular age of my life, I was in middle school and high school, and I had more things to do to be cool and not be a nerd as it was back in the 90s.
Brent just called me a nerd, but he's not wrong at all.
What I mean is that's actually a nag on me, because like I was more concerned about stuff like that and what people thought of me rather than actually enjoying great TV.
And that's what we get to do now. But because we've watched so much Star Trek and we have Star Trek podcasts on top of this one, we have to remind ourselves this is not a Star Trek podcast. We're going to pull in references. We can't help it. It's the language that we speak. But we have a little game, some rules that we play by, and it's the rule of three. So each one of us coming into each episode have three references that we can make, no more. So Brent, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to come close to it this week.
We've been really good those last couple of weeks.
I've been holding it back, I feel like.
Yeah, we have. And I don't know if that's just because we're getting into the groove of this show and how we're doing this show, or if it just the references just haven't been there. But I can't wait. I can't wait to see where you're going to go with your Star Trek stuff this week.
I got a couple here. Listen, Brent, you know this. I know this. Those of you listening, you are the best part of Babylon 5 for the first time. And so this is one of my favorite parts of the show where we're going to share with you comments, emails, tweets, reviews, whatever it is. And so I'm going to start. Brent, we have a new 5-star review.
Yes!
5-star review!
They're the best kind, really.
This one's on Apple Podcasts from No Date For Me. And No Date For Me says, as a big B5 fan, as well as a Star Trek fan, I'm enjoying your ride. There's so much ahead for you on this journey, and listening to your comments reminds me of how I had to be dragged into the show by a friend, and I'm eternally grateful for the gift he gave me. This was a show that received terrible marketing in the U.S., often placed at 4 a.m. on the network. I would set the VCR, yep, that old, to record it, and I missed 30 minutes of one episode because the network randomly changed the time. I was up every morning super early to watch it after that point and to make sure I never missed a moment. I hope you get to that same point when each show is a roller coaster of good stuff that you can't wait until you see the next episode.
For our younger listeners out there, a VCR stands for video cassette recorder. And we used to have these big, they were like the size of bricks. And you would have, it went reel to reel. Like you had a wheel and it was magnetic tape on one side and it was on the other side. And what you had to do, if you had to watch a show that you weren't going to be able to see, you would have to put in this blank tape. Usually put a piece of tape over the thing that would keep you from recording over it. And you had to set it and you had to watch it. And it was scraggly and you had to watch the commercials with it. And if somebody came in and recorded over your show before it was done, then you just lost out. Like imagine DVR before, like on actual physical media. It was gross. But yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry. I missed the name of who you said you were reading there, but that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
No Date For Me was who left that one. Thank you so much for that. And what a perfect review the VCR piece heading into this episode. Little spoiler right there for you.
Hey, one more thing, Jeff. I think we talked about this last week. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I've discovered here recently? People can also listen to our podcast on Audible.
Isn't that amazing?
And you can leave a review on Audible. You usually say go over to Apple, which you should still go over to Apple, but also on Audible, you can leave a review there as well.
Pretty cool. I mean, who knew, right? I mean, I love that. Well, on top of books, on top of Audible, you can also catch us on YouTube. And if you're listening to this, thank you so much for listening to it. But you can also see Brent and my made for podcasting faces on YouTube. And those are...
I'm not sure that that's the selling point, Jeff.
No? I mean, it's pretty great.
No, it's our awesome backgrounds. They get to do this with our awesome backgrounds. That's what it is. Yeah.
That's some cool stuff going on back here. But on YouTube, we don't edit those. And normally that's like, oh God, are you serious? No, they sound great. They're good. But you get to see all the mistakes, all the stuff that like... I literally was going to show up to this episode with a tinfoil hat for Brent because he went down... You went down some pretty concerning rabbit holes last time. You had the red yarn going, and then because the government said this thing, then it turned into this.
Was I wrong?
We'll find out. But on YouTube, Christian Schoenwald says, and I apologize if I pronounced that incorrectly, but Christian says, thanks, guys. You've done something unexpected. You've made me want to go back and rewatch these episodes.
Oh, that's cool.
This one, I think this was Infection. It's okay. Probably my least watched episode of season one in the multiple rewatches that I've made of B5.
If I remember that one right, that was the one where we were like, this episode was garbage. And then at the 27-minute mark, it turned on a dime and was like amazing.
Yep.
If I remember, that, I think that's
the one, definitely. Yeah. Well, and then he says, when you finish each season, it'd be interesting to hear an episode that has you talking about the season as a whole and how your opinions of some of the episodes may have changed because of what came after them. Once again, thank you for the great work. Looking forward to next week.
Awesome. Thank you, Christian. That's amazing. Jeff, I had a YouTube comment I wanted to read that I found.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I was going through it. This one is from Mike. I loved this one. This one made me... cackle. It was so good. He says this. It's real short. He goes, I made the mistake of opening YouTube at 1 a.m. and now I can't quit you. Love it, Mike.
Well, welcome. You're awesome. Mike, I don't think we can quit you either. So welcome aboard.
It was great. It was great. Jeff.
Brent.
We like our games here on the show.
A little bit, huh?
Yes. One of the games we like is we get to the end of the show and we don't read the episode description or anything of the next episode. We just take the title and we make a guess as to what we thought the episode would be. But now we're bringing up the other part of the game where we're like, hey, did you get it right or not? So we have watched this week's episode. This week's episode is Deathwalker. We talked about it last week, what you thought it would be. Jeff, remind the folks what you said last week it was going to be. And were you anywhere near correct?
So I was thinking this was going to be what we thought Infection was going to be. So patient zero comes in and then spreads death all throughout the station. I was completely off on this one. 100% wrong.
Yeah, that was not at all. I said that this was going to be Soul Hunter Part 2, and I was wrong. This had nothing to do with Soul Hunter whatsoever. But that was my thought was we're finally like Soul Hunter was going to get a little redemption. And it just didn't at all.
I don't know that it's going to. I mean, I love your wishful thinking, your optimism there.
Well, but everybody out there keeps saying that nothing is wasted. Everything comes back to pay off later. And that has to be the guy who's going, neg, tig, dog, mong, ming, nang, magog, big goo.
That's good. That's really good. Have you been watching that one? Like you keep going back?
No. Yeah, no. All right, Jeff. Well, like I said, in today's episode, though, we are discussing Deathwalker. So for what the show is actually about, why don't you let the folks out there know what happened in this week's episode?
Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5First. That's the number 5 in the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5First. We can't wait to see you there. Well, holy Ambassador Malari, it's Kosh. Kosh, remember that guy, Kosh? He's on the station. He's interacting with people. And specifically, he's interacting with resident telepath Talia Winters. Now, Kosh is hiring her to work with one of the most obnoxious people ever to be on Babylon 5, at least so far. Talia, we've learned, is a P5 as far as her Psycor rating goes. This guy is apparently a P23, almost double that of the Psycops. He and Kosh go back and forth for a while. It makes no sense whatsoever. But Talia eventually has a vision of what we learn is one of the most traumatic events of her life. The super annoying guy, who is a vicar, because like a VCR tape, VCR, vicar.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he records that memory.
Sorry.
There it is. But he records Talia's memory and he sells it to Kosh for, I don't know, maybe having a bargaining chip against her in the future or something. Well, in the obligatory opening scene where the big bad is seen coming onto the station, our burgeoning favorite Natoth, Jakar's aide, just straight out wails on this lady who comes in. We'll find out later is called Deathwalker. Now this beatdown, Brent, I could talk about
epic.
This. It was epic. She's got a wrench and she is just going. I got thoughts on that because it was so good. Well, Deathwalker is the name given to Jadur, the evil overlord of the near extinct, or spoiler alert, the soon to be extinct, Dilgar. Natoth has sworn an oath to kill Deathwalker on sight because of the carnage that she's left behind, and specifically the medical experiments that she did on her family and her grandpa. Jakar stops her, though, from fulfilling that oath because Jadur has something that the Narn want, and Earth also wants. And there's probably others as well that want this. Jadur, Deathwalker's developed an immortality drug. Big catch on this drug, though. You have to drain the life out of a person in order to form the catalyst to make another person immortal. Mm-hmm. But even knowing that, Earth is still interested. The Narn are still interested, and they're trying to get Deathwalker to go to their planet to negotiate with them. The League of Non-Affiliated Worlds, though, has other plans. They want her tried for her war crimes, but the council votes against it. Sinclair is the only member that votes for the trial, while Kosh doesn't even bother to show up. The battles and the wars with the Dilgar threatened most of the non-affiliated worlds in the universe, but some, like the Narn and Centauri, and even the Minbari, we learn, were tied up with Deathwalker in one way or another. Earth is the one that turned the tide against the Dilgar, and it's Earth that she agrees to go to. But Kosh has other plans. As she's heading to the jump gate, a Vorlon ship flies through, blasts the vessel, killing Deathwalker and the guards accompanying her. And all Kosh has to say about it is, you are not ready for immortality. So Brent, what did you think of Deathwalker?
Jeff, I said that I thought that this episode was going to be Soul Hunter Part 2. I will tell you, I was completely wrong about that. However, what I'm not wrong about is this episode is what Soul Hunter should have been.
Mm.
This was a great episode. It was so good. This episode had twists. It had turns. I wasn't exactly sure what was going on. It had psych outs. It had fake outs. It had, it introduced new people, new species and stuff to us. It expanded the world. It expanded the League of Unaffiliated Nations. Like, we got a really good look at how they work and how they operate. Kosh came in and then he pulled the ultimate trump card move, which we'll probably talk about this in a little bit, but I'm not sure how much I feel about Kosh right now, because he sort of just seems to be like a, you guys are all beneath me type of like, and he might be legit about that. You know, like, he might actually not be wrong. And like, he seems almost overpowered for what's going on. And I was really glad to get a lot of Kosh in this one, but overall, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I don't know that I'm going to have a ton of Star Trek points to this one. This was just a good episode of sci-fi that I personally enjoyed a whole lot. How about you, Jeff?
I loved this episode. And when I watched it the second time, just a little while ago, it feels like it's a two-parter. Like it's got so much going on in it, but it doesn't feel rushed or overloaded at all. But there's so much, there's so many stories and so many threads happening through the whole piece that as much as I hated the whole Kosh, Talia Winters and Abbott or whatever his name was, mm-hmm. I hated everything about that. Mm-hmm. It was kind of nice though, because I needed a breath in the episode with everything that was going on. I was like, okay, I can tune out. Well, whatever the heck is going on here is going on.
Right.
And just kind of like collate all of my thoughts. One thing I loved, like Babylon 5, I think gets a bad rap for its effects. I've not been kind to it in past episodes. There's some moments in this episode when like there's some of the non-affiliated ships come up and start threatening the station. It's pretty corny. But the makeup in here, Deathwalker's makeup was awesome. I loved it. The contacts and the way her nose was set up just added this whole, I don't know, just like, well, alienness to her that was so believable. I don't know. To me, it the makeup made it work, because frankly, the acting was so over the top that if she didn't have that makeup, I couldn't have stomached it. Mm-hmm. But no, I thought this was great. One of my big takeaways to kind of close out my opening thoughts was around how the Council and the League of Non-Affiliated Worlds works. And that's that. So the main council races that we've met, right? The Narn, the Centauri, the Minbari, the Vorlon, and the humans, they each get one vote. And then the whole League of Non-Affiliated, I have no idea how many non-affiliated worlds, but they get one.
They get a collective one.
Yeah. So that's six votes.
Yeah.
That's not going to, like, most committees and councils are built with an odd number or have a process for a tiebreaker. So I'm wondering if there's some escalation process for a tiebreaker or something, or if they just assume the Vorlon are never going to actually participate, so it's actually only five votes.
Honestly, from the what happened in this episode, I don't think they do have a contingency plan. I just don't think it's something they think is going to be an issue that often, although they should.
Yeah.
You know,
what we've asked the question a lot about just about everybody on here. Why are they here? And like, I want to dive into that with Kosh. He has said a couple episodes ago, when Sinclair went to warn about the home guard coming onto the station, Kosh, mm-hmm. you need to know about this. You need to go help out. He's like, yeah, I don't care. I don't care about that.
Right.
Here we have an unabashed war criminal showing up, mm-hmm. atrocities that are unimaginable. And he's like, yeah, I don't care, until the rubber hits the road and he comes up and he's the one who's like, yeah, I'm unilaterally deciding what's going to happen to this person. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the heck Kosh is doing there. I don't understand why he's there.
I think Kosh is there almost because like he has to be, but also in a little bit of like, we're the police of the universe. We are the power. So far I get the idea that the Vorlon and the Minbari are like almost the elevated ones, you know, they're the more enlightened and they understand it better than everybody else, you know, and almost like the Vorlon are even that much more, maybe even further out than the Minbari are. The Earthlings, I'm gonna call them Earthlings, they honestly seem very new on this whole stage mm-hmm. to me compared to everybody else. And then, you know, you get the Narn and the Centauri, they're off in their own little world doing their deal. Right. So, and then you have the League of Non-Affiliated Worlds, which honestly, they all seemed pretty affiliated with each other to me. So what do I know? But that's almost what it feels like to me. Like, why is he here? He's here to make sure that these other worlds don't screw everything up too bad.
Yeah.
Like, I'll let y'all destroy yourselves, but when it starts affecting everything, that's when I'm going to step in. Like, that's what it almost feels like to me.
Like, they're up there kissing on the edge of potential immortality, and he's like, nope, you couldn't solve your problem in your cute little council, so we got this. This ain't going to happen.
We're going to take this away from you. You don't get to have this. Mom and dad say no.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, you know, because Delenn wasn't there, right? This is, everything was through her little ambassador, and he's obviously not ready to take the reins yet.
That guy wasn't ready to even be sitting at the table. I mean,
no.
And okay, so he walks in and telegraphed totally what his, you know, Delenn can't make it. I'll be here with her vote, and I've been given instructions. And then walks off, and like, oh, okay, so he's voting no, clearly. But right. I thought it was cool how he stuck around to apologize and explain why. But also, like, it was just obvious he, I don't know, maybe he's more an academic, a little more like into the books, into the wisdom of things, as opposed to the application of things, where Delenn's been in it.
Right. You know? Well, he's not a Satai, and Delenn is.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, Kosh, that's almost what it feels like to me at this point with him, is that he's there as like a failsafe. Like, when they screw everything up, he'll be the one who steps in. But outside, if it means they destroy themselves, then cool. But he's going to put certain limits on them.
I think that says a lot. Like, if we take that as being true, and I don't see a reason not to, but like, he was fine with hate groups coming on board and assaulting and killing aliens. He was fine with the Narn attacking Ragesh 3 and, you know, pushing the Centauri out. The line that we know right now is is immortality.
There was there's a species in the Stargate universe that is like that, where they're the sort of ascended, you know, we're on the next plane than you are, and we'll let you guys destroy yourselves. We don't care. But and we're not supposed to interfere. You guys just sort of do your own thing. We're not even worried about you. What was that line from Game of Thrones? Lions don't worry about what's going on with the sheep, or something like that. Like, it's that sort of almost haughtiness. And there becomes a conflict of what happens when one of them does want to start interfering with, you know, the mere mortal, physical, corporeal beings down there. And that's almost like, it's almost on that level to me with Kosh. But and I think it almost has to be, because he's a ball of energy. He's a Medusan.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like,
so anyway,
look it up. Look it up. If you don't know Medusan, it's a Star Trek thing.
Seriously. All right. So I want, can we finish out the Kosh thing? Cause I want to talk about him and Talia real quick. Let's, and then we'll dive back into the rest of it. More purely observational. We got a really good long look at Kosh in his suit. And how his suit looks.
Yeah.
Jeff, this is supposed to be a family-friendly show. It looked obscene to me. Absolutely. Like, the little thing that was sticking out, and he had his little mouth.
Uh-huh.
Like, it looked like I should not have my 7-year-old around watching the show with me.
Well, I'll tell you, and this is one, if you've got your 7-year-old around, just, you know, real quick, headphones, because not every species keeps their genitals in the same place. That was exactly my thought too.
I understood that reference.
They're just wagging around, you know, it's like, what is going on here?
I think it's supposed to be his mouth. I think it's supposed to be however he communicates. I'm not entirely sure. Obviously that thing is not genitals. That is part of a suit, right? Yeah, or maybe, at least I think that's what we assume, maybe. But I don't know.
Well, yeah, because in the war prayer, I think it was, they talked about how in this encounter suit, he's completely sealed off. So I've got to guess it's either that how he talks, or it's ventilation, like atmosphere exchange or something like that.
Oh, that could make sense. Yeah. That could make sense. It just didn't look right, man. Yeah. Like, how this got past network executives, how this got through production design, and somebody didn't like, yo, dude, that thing looks like a thing.
Yeah.
Have you seen the original drawing of the Little Mermaid castle? It kind of looks like one of those. So anyway, I have to bring it up because we're watching this 30 years later. I'm just being honest. Okay. So you explained really well what happened with Kosh and Talia and this whole deal. He's doing this whole thing to get something on her,
I guess,
to get her greatest fear, her worst memory, her
something,
whatever it is. My biggest thought coming out of that, for whatever reason, is how much did he pay for that in the end? And I'm going to bring this back around to not just money, but because what he paid her to come be a part of this whole thing was apparently astronomical.
It was big.
It was very generous. Yeah. It was big. And goodness knows how much he had to pay the other dude.
Abbott.
Right. For the memory crystal and to come in and hey, you dude, come in. We're gonna mess with her mind and you're gonna record something and give it to me. He had to pay a lot of money for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I don't know if money's a thing for him or not, but whatever. He still had to pay. Why is it so important that he's going to invest those kinds of resources in it? That's my question right now coming out of this. Like, from a storytelling standpoint, I thought it was super clever. Now, the makeup and the dude's head thing and all that, like, okay, I'll forgive it. It's 1990s. Yeah, like, yeah. It's early 90s. You have my forgiveness. That's the TV I grew up in, so I'm cool with it. My kids would be like, Dad, this is so lame.
That's how I was the whole time. So lame.
But I love when you have an episode that has such great rewatchability that when you go back and watch it a second time and you know what's going on, you see it. But the first time you're going through it, you don't see it at all. And like, this is just what's he doing? What is going on? Why is he being so weird? What are they talking about? You know, and Abbott's like hitting on Talia, like, hey, let's go have lunch. Let's go have dinner.
Which I think was all that part of just setting her off base.
Something, right.
There was a cool moment when she confronted him and she's like, dude, what is this all about? What are you actually negotiating for? And he said, it's not good to reflect too much. He said, he's like, you know, I could tell you, but it's not good to reflect too much. And then that's when she got her first view of her, you know, interaction with the serial killer. Like, he totally answered her. Watching it the first time, you're just like, what? But the second time, he totally answered her question. Look at that.
Right. So just to get it out there so we can talk about it, what was her actual vision that got recorded that got sent over to Kosh?
So one of her early jobs as a psychor telepath and the whole thing was to inhabit the mind, go through the mind of a serial killer. And in that experience, she'd experienced the death of people and his aggression towards the people that he had killed.
So why was that important to Kosh to get?
That's the question. And I'll tell you what, if we get to the end of this series, so in 101 some odd episodes from now, and we get to the end of this and this hasn't paid off, I'm going to be furious, Brent. I mean, we sat through a good, 10 minutes of this stuff. If it does, I'm planting my flag now. I will write a sternly worded letter to someone.
Yeah, I think it's going to, though. And this is just based on what feedback we've heard from the fans out there, that nothing is wasted. And this is such a large part of this episode. Yeah,
it's a lot of
that time. It has to come back. And that's the thing. You know, I know I've harped on the whole A plot, B plot, and how they aren't even connected at all. These two, once again, not connected at all, not even in the same atmosphere. But in Babylon 5, what we're told is that usually the B plot does something to further characters. And then they come back to it, I'm assuming, as an A plot later on, right? So this sets something up to set in motion. I would think it has to come back, Jeff.
I bet.
Now, the people out there listening are going, of course it does. It's in episode 18.
Right. It's huge when this thing comes around. It's massive.
Wait till next episode. Next week, you'll get it. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's going to come back. But for now, honestly, this might be my number one mystery.
Really?
In the show. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I mean, like, because last week we got the whole thing with Sinclair and what happened to him when he had that little mind wipe. Mm-hmm. We know he was captured by the Minbari and he was tortured for 3 days and they at some point wiped his mind. Now, why did they still pull back? What ultimately made them pull back? That's there. But that's a little, I feel like that's going to be underlying for a lot longer.
Yeah.
This one feels like this could be like, what's Kosh up to? This is my, like, okay, I'll let that one sit. What's Kosh is up to something, and I need to know what it is.
Here's my conspiracy theory. Okay.
You got a theory.
I got one. Yes. Okay. So yes, you're right. Theories. The Vorlon and Kosh are there as kind of the parents of the whole thing going on. He was aware of the whole Ironheart thing that went on and where he ascended and became, and that he gave a gift to Talia. Couple that with what we now know, the Psi-Corps getting into everything in Earth politics and whatnot, he's setting up something with Talia where Talia is going to be his agent on the inside. And so this is his blackmail to go in and say, at first he's going to try and like sell her on it. Hey, I need you to go do this. I need you to this. When she comes back and says no, there'll be this blackmail. And ultimately this is going to lead to something where, like, I don't know, Talia has to try and assassinate the president of Earth or the head of Psycor. This is going to be Kosh's way of shutting down all the stuff Psycor is trying to do.
I'm here for it. I love it. I'm here for every single bit of that.
And if it's anything less than that, I will be furious.
It probably has absolutely nothing to do with that. Yeah. But I'm here for it if that's the case.
I love, though, with stuff paying off, there's been these little seeds dropped the whole time. I mean, some huge, a whole episode, Midnight on the Firing Line between the Centauri and the Narn. But in this one, when Jakar is telling Natoth to chill out, you're not going to get to fulfill your blood oath because of this. He also said, like, he almost pulled a line straight from Conan the Barbarian when he's like, we are here to crush our enemies, to see them driven before us. Like, he just outright said it. And I got to say, too, I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast, but the actor that plays Jakar is Tomalak in The Next Generation, the greatest Romulan of them all.
Is he?
It's Tomalak. Yeah.
That's Jakar?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah. And in this episode, he was so Tomalak. Like, all you got to do is put less makeup on him, some ears, and then massive, massive shoulder pads. And you've got Tomalak walking around Babylon 5. But yeah, he was great. I love Jakar. I love Jakar, period. Loved him in this episode. But as I was watching it the whole time, I'm just like, he's Tomalak right now. Like, everything he's doing, his politics, his aggression, his behind the scenes kind of manipulation of both Jador and Natoth was just, it was great. So good.
All right. I want to talk about this. A couple episodes ago, I had a question. Can people just beat up each other on Babylon 5 right in front of the station commander and then have no repercussions whatsoever? Apparently, that's only if you're one of the ambassadors. Because if you're one of the ambassadors' insistence, you better keep your hands to yourself, because she got busted hardcore.
Right away, too.
Yeah. Now, she should have been in jail and not let out of jail, frankly. There might have been some, what do they call it, the ambassador thing, diplomatic immunity or something like that, which, no. But okay, fine. But at least something happened. Like, at least the police came and did something. But man, she beat the ever-loving snot out of this lady. And she surprised her and was like, wah!
It was awesome. She just came, Deathwalker! And just started laying left and right. Saw the wrench, grabbed it. I mean, it was just, it went to theme just after they kind of pulled her off. And she just got one off. Boom, when they pulled her, I'm like, there's no way that person's still alive. And I thought it was cool how they even caught that. We're like, wow, her metabolism is amazing.
It's amazing.
For this, but oh yeah, she just ripped into her. And Garibaldi, I thought, was great, where he's just like, you're gonna spend so much time behind bars, your spots will turn gray or something like that. It's just like, yeah, Garibaldi, give it to her.
Give it, throw the book at her. Let me ask you a question. How long did it take you to realize that Deathwalker was a specific person and not like a type of a person, or like a person who belongs to a group or something like that? But it actually is like, it is a name for a specific person.
Basically, when they explicitly told me that it was
her. Yeah. Okay. Cause I was like, I kept waiting like, oh, what are the Deathwalkers? Who are they? Like, you know, you just have this blood pact against anyone who's a Deathwalker. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. It's this actual person. Because, okay, so she is basically what's the name of the Nazi doctor that was in charge of everything and all the experimentation?
Oh, my gosh. It was Josef Mengele.
Right, yeah. That guy right there. That's kind of who she's supposed to be. Stargate had a similar person. And I forget her name, and I'm not going to go through it right now, but there was a whole thing about her. Star Trek Voyager had the same person in Chromo Set. But, you know, he was a Cardassian who experimented on Bajorans, and basically, like, he gained all this medical knowledge, but at their expense, and he had zero qualms with it. And that was who this person was. Man, this one took me on a ride, though, to go down the story of Deathwalker, because at first she seems rather unassuming. Mm-hmm. And then it's, oh, no, she actually is this person. And it all looks like that. And she's like, oh, no. Yeah, that's exactly who I, like, people didn't believe it was her. Even when she said, no, this is me. And here's my DNA. And my DNA says it. Yeah, I still don't really believe it. Okay, this is who she is. But then she starts talking about, she's got this thing that's going to help people be immortal. And almost like it's this redemptive thing for her. And that keeps going through and people are like, no, there's something's not right. Something's not right. And then all of a sudden it drops like, no, this isn't redemption for her. This is her being her. And it's her like ultimate lifelong F you, I guess, yeah, to everybody out there of like, my work's going to continue even after I die. And, you know, it was so villainous.
Well, she said, I loved it when she said the people that curse us will be the mm-hmm. people that hold us up as heroes. Mm-hmm. So it was exactly that, her ultimate F you of just, yep, hey, I murdered all these people and now I'm a hero mm-hmm. because of it. Oof. I think a big part of what made her work, before we dive into what I think is, I think there were a couple of huge themes in this one that we can touch on before getting to closing thoughts, because I like to talk through mm-hmm. at least one of them. But the actor who played Deathwalker, like I said, just egregious overacting, but mm-hmm. played the actor played Ursa in Superman 2, the like the, you know, General Zod and the other big guy, the one that Superman, you know, put in the little glass container that went off.
Yeah.
So played her. And then if you ever watched V or V the Final Battle, she played Pamela, who came in to be Diana's foil on the Visitor's side of things. So, I mean, just awesome, awesome villain.
I never saw that one, but yeah, I know who you're talking about with the other one.
It was so good.
And I was kind of sitting, I was like, would she be really old for that? And I was like, oh no, that's probably about that right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about right. So.
But I think it was one of the big themes of this episode. Like you said, redemption, right? And
yeah.
Sinclair makes the, I don't know if he's trying to make the case or if he's just kind of playing devil's advocate, but he's talking to Garibaldi and he says, yeah, she did all these horrible things, but if her work is able to, she could save more lives than were lost because of her, than were killed because of her. Does that almost make up for all of her atrocities? Mm-hmm. To me, it just really brought up the question of justice. Is it justice or is it vengeance? And when the League of Non-Affiliated Worlds wanted her tried for her war crimes, like I was looking forward to that because they could have explored that. What is justice mm-hmm. for her? What is vengeance? Now, at the end of the thing that you said, she was just like, this is total evil, horrible villain kind of stuff to do. But it posed that huge question.
Yeah.
What's the right thing to do in a situation like Ivanova, I think, did a great job passing it off where she's like, As dubious as Earth's opinions are on this, I think they're better outfitted, better equipped to handle something of this magnitude. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, track with me on this.
Okay.
I'm gonna take you down a wild rabbit hole, but it's gonna come back, I promise. All right. Have you ever seen the movie Frozen?
Oh yeah.
You have a daughter.
I have a daughter. So
you've seen the movie Frozen. Yeah. Do you know what is the absolute worst line in all of Frozen?
I'm gonna let you give me that one.
I cannot stand this line. I hear it every single time. It's in the song Fixer Upper, mm-hmm. where Kristoff and Anna are back with the trolls and they're singing and they're trying to get them all hooked up. And like Mama Troll or something gets to this one line. She's like, we're not saying you can change him because people don't really change. I hate that line because I don't believe that that's true at all. And that honestly, that's not a message I want spreading to my children. Now, I love Frozen. There is a lot of stuff about Frozen that I do want spreading to my children, but that particular line I wish we could pull out because I got to tell you, I'm a big sucker for redemption stories. I know this makes me rare in this day and age, but I am a big believer in the idea that people can change. I'm not saying they do, but that they can. Okay. I'm not saying they always do. Right.
Yeah.
Frankly, I have to believe that because otherwise I'm still a really bad dude.
Right.
I'm in my 40s now. 20 years ago, I am not the same person as I am today. 10 years ago, I'm not the same person as I am today. I am a growing, changing, evolving being. And in 10 years, I won't be then who I am now. And I think that's the way it's supposed to be quite frank with you. But when I look back on my life, and the things I did when I was younger and who I was. Now, I was not Deathwalker.
That we know of.
I take the fifth. But there are a lot of things in my life I'm not proud of. You know, there are people that live in my wake, mm-hmm. so to speak. And there's nothing I can do to change that outside of ask for forgiveness and try to make amends as best I can. And honestly, in some cases, just stay out of their life so they don't have to have me around. Okay. I have changed. I am a changed person today. I have to believe people can change. Otherwise, like I said, I'm still that same guy. I love redemption stories, yeah. Right? I really wanted this to be that kind of a story. Yes. I really did. I was tracking along with it. And when it turned and it's not a redemption story, this is actually like, no, she's still in her thing. I loved it. I really did because it got me, because I thought it was going someplace and it turned in. And I mean, her plan was perfect for her character. It was amazing. And how she brought people there. But at the same time, I can't say disappointed. That's not the right word. But I was a little shocked it wasn't a redemption story, because I was about to bring in a whole different discussion to this podcast with that.
Yeah.
You know, the twist at the end of this episode is my favorite twist we've seen so far in Babylon 5, because it got me.
Yeah.
I did not expect this to go where it went. And when it took me there, I didn't mind.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're watching a show, you're watching a movie, and they're going along, and then they put in a twist, and you're like, that's not where I wanted to go. Like, I'm not okay going there with you, because that's not okay. This one, I was perfectly fine to go there. It was a fantastic episode, start to finish. I don't know that it had a whole lot of message, maybe, but I very much enjoyed the where we were going. And I hope maybe one day we get an actual redemption story that we can really talk about.
Well, I think I'm so on board, because if it had been a redemption story, it would have been so many other episodes of sci-fi out there.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes you have to have a not great ending, because we experience mm-hmm. those a lot in life. Now, in my day job that I do, I'm the background check expert for one of the largest public sector agencies on the West Coast. I've written legislation. I've been in front of the federal government of the United States talking about background checks, which sounds so boring, but it's fascinating. And it's so appropriate to this conversation, because it's exactly that. There's two types of background checks. There's a background check that affirms that people can change and can have redemption. And there's a type of background mm-hmm. check that says once a thief, always a thief, basically. Mm-hmm. And both of those things right. exist in our society. And what's hard is the term background check comes up today, and immediately people start thinking about firearms and guns and things like that. And that's definitely a part of the conversation. But what's difficult for me is someone who actually understands the statistics, the science, some of the psychology around that redemption mm-hmm. is that you're exactly right, Brent. Most people can change. Many people do change, and quite a few don't mm-hmm. as well.
Right.
But there can't be one single answer, and it can't be like what the League of Non-Affiliated Worlds wanted to hear, where they wanted her strung up. They wanted this right. basically public execution that was sanctioned by the council. When they didn't get it, they picked up their ball and they went home. Well, we're not going to play this game anymore. I thought that was such, that coupled up with a quote that I'll bring up in my closing thoughts on this, were such a indictment of modern day democracies, or what we call democracies, where they're just like, oh, I didn't get my way. Fine. But I'm not going to play anymore.
Ooh. Yeah. So to piggyback on what you're saying there, and I've had this thought a lot. All right, let's go into politics just a little bit. We're Star Trek podcasters. Guess what?
We
get into that. Mm-hmm. The number one problem that I see with American politics, and I'm speaking this as an American citizen broadcasting from America, this is just what I'm familiar with. Anybody else out there who's overseas, I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on in your country, because I'm American. But we were, as a country, we were founded on the idea of compromise, getting two people together in a room, letting them talk it out, and come up with an answer that neither side is really satisfied mm-hmm. with, right?
Yeah.
But we're going to be able to, even though we are different people, fundamentally have different views on everything, we're still going to be able to come together, and we'll figure out something in order to move forward together. And in the last, I'd say 10 years, maybe 15, there has been this deal where I have noticed, and it started in government, but I've also seen it in society as a whole, that if you don't do it the way I do, then we're just not even going to talk. We're going to shut the whole thing down. And I'm seeing this on both sides of the aisle. And people can pinpoint blame it at each side. The truth is, And I'm not trying to be one of these people, well, you know, both sides are bad. I'm not trying to be that guy, okay? I'm legitimately observing going, you guys have sat back and said, if you don't do what I want, what we're going to do, we're going to stonewall everything, as has the other side. And we can't move forward. The only time we can now move forward is when one party is in control of the whole dang government. And sometimes that's not even moving forward. That's moving backward, mm-hmm. as we've recently seen. So, you know, you have to be able to come together. And what you just said there, because you're not going to do what we want to do, we're going to pick up our ball and go home. That is so dangerous. You have to be committed to the table, right? When you're coming together in an ambassadorial way, you have to be committed to the table. Where I may not get my way, but I'm going to stay at the table. Mm-hmm. Because you have to have a, because guess what? If you leave, you don't have a voice anymore.
And that's the thing. Ambassador Calica, I think her name was, who kind of who led the charge. When
was she the one? I'm sorry. Was she the one that almost got killed by Sinclair, but then didn't in the last episode?
Same species, different person, different actor. Okay. In fact, super side quick note: this actor who played this one is played by Robin Curtis, who's Savick in Star Trek III. There's
really
three right there. But yeah, a Savick,
Spock's baby mom.
Uh huh. Great for the role, but when they lost that vote in front of the council, she says, Sinclair, you said we would have a voice. If we're not going to be heard and our voice isn't going to be heard, then we're going to go. And I'm sitting here as a person, a bureaucrat who works within these like legislative and, you know, governing council things. You did have your voice and it was one vote and you were outvoted. So don't take your ball and go home. Come up with a new, like you said, come up with a compromise, come up with a new proposal, try and find a different way of presenting this, because that's how your voice is represented in a real democracy.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, with that, because I feel like we're now into that zone, let's talk about this in terms of deltas, because what you just described there to me is, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to pick up my ball and go home. Frankly, I can't think of anything more anti-Star Trek.
Yeah.
And not just anti-Star Trek, but that whole message, you know, of we got to talk it out. We got to compromise. I can't think of anything more against that than what you just described. So I will ask you to boil this down for us, Jeff. And does this show have any of that Star Trek equality? Not comparing it to Star Trek, just that moral, that hope for the future. Does it do what sci-fi should do, especially this show, which feels like it should have some sort of message to it? So do that. We're going to grade it delta 0 to 5 deltas and let us know, Jeff, should we have watched it sooner?
I think we should have watched this one sooner. I think this says so much about how the world of Babylon 5 works. Like just as a government wonk, you know, somebody who loves the legislative process and everything, actually seeing it in action, it explains a lot. And I think after our conversation, it tells me so much more about, I think, where every race sits on the main council now, including the Vorlon. You know, so I think, definitely should have watched it sooner. I did watch it twice. I'm probably going to watch this one again. I really, really like this episode.
Yeah.
But like I said, Sinclair asks a couple really great questions in here. He poses the justice versus redemption or justice versus vengeance question. But he also talks about if we'll ever get past the paradigm of the little powers at the mercy of big powers. And like we've been talking about it, I think that puts, that indicts our modern interpretations of democracy, whether that's a republic or the United Nations or whatever. And we saw through this episode what happens when people don't. And I think to your earlier point, what we saw happen in this episode, we're seeing happen in politics now. We have parties that are walking out of legislative sessions and state houses so that you're not going to play. We're just going to walk away. We're just not even going to play anymore. We're seeing this happen. What I think was great though is,
well, let me, who's doing what Jakar did in this episode, which is, hey, if you give me what I want, I'll vote your way. Give me what, you're not going to vote. You're not going to do that. Then I'm going to go this way.
That was brilliant. He stands up. He's like the Narn regime very much understands the atrocities, and we sympathize with our neighbors, and we will proudly vote yes under one condition. And then they're like, no way, we're not going to let her be extradited. Oh, well, then we have to vote no. Oh, man, that was so good.
You're not voting for what's right. You're voting for what's good. Like, not even good for you, honestly. Like, that's just not
okay. If you hold Jakar in that versus Sinclair, mm-hmm. where the league walked away, they went away, but Sinclair's like, no, let's talk. Here's what I want to propose. Here's the compromise, mm-hmm. right? You can have oversight. You can be a part of this. And when we get to a point where this is done, you can have her. You can have your trial. We'll both get what we want. You'll have oversight. Like, it was really, this episode was more about politicking almost than mm-hmm. anything else, even though it had a lot of great stuff. I think it posed the great questions that we've talked about. I think the thing we didn't talk about a lot that was big in here is it talked about how easy it is to sell out on what the right, doing the right thing to protect yourself. Lanier, when he even said, he's like, yeah, way back, we got these horrifying weapons from Deathwalker we were gonna use against Earth. It was a long time ago. We didn't use those weapons, but it's too embarrassing to let people know that we stooped to that level. And so we're not going to let her be tried for her war crimes. Ultimately, I think that this episode posed awesome Star Trek-like questions. It didn't dive into them, and it didn't offer a lot on it. With that, I'm going to give it 2 deltas because it posed them. And I've delta'd a couple times on optimism where I think we're going to explore some of these questions in more detail.
Jeff, I think you put it absolutely perfectly. It posed them, but it didn't dive into them. And that, if I have a problem, if I have a nit to pick about this episode, that explains it. I don't know that I had words. Thank you for that, because I didn't have words for it. Like I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but that's it, because it does pose a lot of great questions that, like, I want you to go into this. I want you to make a comment on it, make a stance one way or the other, just have a stance and do it. And they just didn't, you know. And the other question that as a person who believes in redemption, you guys heard my diatribe earlier, at some point you also have to be responsible for the consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. You just do. Like, that's the, and redemption doesn't necessarily absolve you of that responsibility,
accountability, obligation, accountability.
Yeah. It doesn't absolve you of that. It can help mitigate some of that. And then you have to start talking about the ideas of forgiveness. And what is that? What does that mean to have somebody whom you have hurt? I'm not even gonna say the word offended, someone you have hurt to give you forgiveness. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, and what do you do when that person absolutely has zero interest in doing any kind of forgiveness? They just want to hurt you because you hurt them. Is that right? Is that fair? Is that justice? Is that actually justice? I don't know. That's a different conversation to have. They could have had
it. They could have had it.
And they didn't go down that route. And that's okay. It's a 42-minute show. I'll give it to them. You said 2 deltas. I'm going to agree with you. I was about to give it like 1, but it definitely took us down those routes of asking the questions. I think Star Trek does it best. Actually, not Star Trek. Sci-fi does it best when they ask the questions, when they explore them, but then don't answer them.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave that to the audience. But you have to explore it. You have to send your characters down that journey. And they just didn't do that here. But they started it. So 2 deltas. Yeah. I think that's pretty good. And yeah, absolutely, we should have watched this one a lot sooner.
You know, I think too, after kind of hearing you talk a little more, it makes me think that what this did, it doesn't make it more Star Trek-y by any means, but it, in the evolution of storytelling, Star Trek is able mm-hmm. to present the question, dive into it, and often leave it for us to decide. Not always, but often. Mm-hmm. What this did is it asked the question, and then it demonstrated to us why we as a society in today's world aren't answering these questions. Because we let things like politics, we let things like deals we made 10, 15 years ago get in the way of doing the right thing. So it doesn't change my score in any way, but it just adds that context of, we have people asking these questions all the time in our society.
Right.
We're never getting answers to it. And I think this episode of Babylon 5 showed us why.
All right, Jeff, I think that's going to do our conversation here on Deathwalker. What are we watching next
week? So next week, and again, Brent said this at the beginning, we only know the name. This is a fun game we like to play. We're going to guess what we think it's about based on the name itself. So Brent, next week, mm-hmm. we're watching Believers. What do you think Believers is going to be about?
I think it's about a kid examining, or maybe an old man, sorry, not a kid, an old man examining his life as a boxer and facing himself throughout the course of his life. If you don't know what I'm currently describing is the music video to the song Believer by Imagine Dragons.
That's not all you're describing. It's also an episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Is it? What episode?
That's when Chakotay is like doing the boxer thing. And yeah.
You're totally right.
I gave you the buzz. I mean, it's Imagine Dragons for sure, but
I thought you were just telling me to shut up and move on. Believers. I mean, this show dives into faith. It dives into religion on some level, even if it's like metaphysical or existential religion. I think this has to go back to something of that nature, believers, or it's more political. Do you really believe in Earth First? You're a believer or something like that. Like I think it's got to go down that realm. Like, unless it literally has nothing to do with belief. Like, remember Parliament of Dreams? It had nothing to do with the Parliament or Dreams. Like, it could be like, this has nothing to do with believing.
This is going to be about business on the Zocalo and how, you know, how the Trade Federation or whatever works in there. Right. I
don't know. These are believers in economy.
Now, I'm not far off on my guess. I'm guessing cultists of some kind. Yeah, right. Some sort of culty thing.
Maybe this one will be Soul Hunter Part 2.
Yeah, we just keep calling it.
Until we get there. Right. Until we get there. It's got to come back, right?
No, we're going to find out right here next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on whatever podcast app you're listening to us on. And please stop by Apple, stop by Audible, and give us that rating and review. We're going to read it here on the podcast. We're also going to give you some love and share that through our Twitter at Babylon First. And so until next time, I will gladly vote yes on your proposals, Brent, if you will only let me say live long and
Jeff, not a Star Trek podcast.
Fine. And my vote is no.
It's my first time.
Before Game of Thrones, before Breaking Bad, before Battlestar Galactica, there was Babylon 5.
What have I gotten myself into?
Join the Grey 17 crew of both newbies and long-term fans as we review every episode of this groundbreaking sci-fi show.
I wanted to punch him in his stupid face.
I didn't like it.
Hold me back, Scott.
Start in normal space where we discuss each episode spoiler-free. And then, for those who know the show well, join us beyond the rim where we talk about all the plot threads and Easter eggs.
That sounds like another question that we will answer for you years from now. So enjoy.
Whether you're experiencing Babylon 5 for the first or 100th time, we want to go on this journey with you.
This show hits a lot of this stuff pretty head-on.
At the very beginning when the guy was like, if they eat their partner when they're done, what am I getting into with this show?
Join us on Grey 17.
I'm telling you, I'm quitting. I'm just gonna quit. I'm gonna be like, you know what? We're done.